Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and I welcome you to another session here with Biz Rocket. I am excited about today's two guests. Actually, both of them have military experience, one the Army and one the Navy, and actually they're sitting next to each other and peacefully, which is a good thing. So I want to welcome Marvin and Jim to the radio show today. And we're going to start off, Marvin, and go through a little bit of your background and really the topic of today's discussion is going to be learning a little bit about these guys and their experiences. But we also want to dedicate some time to some of the military people that are out there that have some great military experience but are either A, having a hard time transitioning that into the corporate world, and or business owners and corporate executives don't really know what to make of their experience and how that might be able to transcend into the kind of positions that they're looking for. So I'm really looking forward to today's discussion. So Marvin, welcome in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is an exciting topic, and I'm just delighted to be here with Jim, yourself. Just excited about it.
So tell me a little bit about your background, military a little bit, and then tell me about your corporate background.
Sure. My military background, actually served in the United States Navy many moons ago as a shipboard electrician. I served for 4 years, did most of my time in Europe, and served during Desert Shield, and it was a great time for me. And I think really defined who I am as a professional today, and I think you have to decide what's important to you, and I know that that step for me was really important and impacted really my life in general.
Now you've got your title as a service operations leader. Tell us a little bit about your professional career.
Well, sure. I phrase it that way because I think a lot of us consider ourselves managers or executives, and really what you do in our roles when you lead business units, which is typically what I do, is you lead people, and I think that's the most important aspect of any corporate opportunity where you're responsible for people, process, and technology, which is what service operations leaders do. So for me specifically, I've led business units in the consumer service and retail service backgrounds, business units that send people to your home or to your retail space to do installations, product merchandising, product placement on a large scale, national and international basis, probably around 5,000 people do this type of work. So that's why I call myself a service operations leader, because essentially you're leading people to do something on a large scale. And in this case, it is consumer service and retail space driven.
And IT has been a big component of that, I take it?
Oh, absolutely. As of late, I serve as managing director of a IT security firm in the identity and access management space. So really, as a service operations leader, you transform strategy into reality. So the genre of business that you're dealing in is not necessarily as important as what your business fundamentals are. So I've been able to really segue that way into another opportunity in the IT space, identity and access management more specifically. It's been a lot of fun.
What's been the biggest challenge when you're kind of crossing over different industries? You're applying the same leadership, you're applying the same management, but you're crossing into different realms.
Right. I would say the challenge is not necessarily for me, the individual. It's probably more so for the people that are responsible for these industries, because as you know, with the economic climate the way that it is, when you're recruiting for talent, you're really looking for someone that's has 100% of the skill set that you believe you need. So I think the challenge is for people to understand that you may not have necessarily 100% of the total background, but you have the fundamentals that are in place for you to be successful in whatever genre of business you choose. And I think I've been able to do that and at a very, very high level, and I'm not the only one. I don't have that patented.
It's not the Marvin's rule, right?
Exactly.
So what other kinds of things are you bringing to the table for corporations that might be unique to you versus somebody else that might come down the pike and be looking for, you know, that same type of position?
Well, I think you have to clearly understand what it is that, that you do bring to the table. And once you have a clear understanding of that, you don't get away from that. I mean, I have a very simple business premise that I operate with no matter what level or what business I'm working in. And just to kind of frame it up is really, if you start with hiring the absolute very best people that you can have access to, whether they are have the exact experience that you're looking for or whatever, it's my personal opinion that you pursue the best talent that the company can afford. And after you onboard or retain those people, then you have to set a clear strategy on what is specifically that you want to accomplish. What does success look like? And if you can make sure that your employees understand that what success looks like, then you're off to a great start. And the second part of it is you have to provide the necessary tools for someone to be successful. If I wanted you to host a great radio show, then certainly we'd have you state-of-the-art equipment. We'd make sure you have great production people and all the people that are involved. And then we'd tell you what success, you know, absolutely looked like. And then the most important component in my observation is that you have to hold people accountable for their own success. An important part about that is that you have to start with yourself. And I think if you take that business approach, then you can have a lot of success no matter what industry you're in.
So you're bringing that, you're basically bringing everything together that's necessary to make a successful event, and then kind of direct things to make sure that that from an operational standpoint, success is the outcome.
Absolutely. You have to empower people to achieve their personal best, and I think that's what leaders do. And that's the difference,
Marvin,
between leadership and management.
Give me an example of how you've done that in the past. Can you think of something, a group or organization or a specific situation that you applied those skills and were able to get that result?
Sure, absolutely. Probably one of the most fun opportunities that I've had is I had a chance to run my first business unit, a company called Top Priority Sales. Top Priority Sales had about 3,000 product demonstrators that performed demonstrations in retailers like Costco and others. And these employees were a part of an acquisition. And in this acquisition, they were the smallest of the group. I believe they were performing around $12 million in revenue at the time that I took over the company. And if you're the smallest part of a roll-up, so to speak, you're going to have challenges getting resources from the parent company, feeling good about yourself. You just feel like the stepchild. And for me, I took that as a challenge. And I had this really group of people that really felt disenfranchised, didn't have the resources that they needed to be successful. And I did just the same things that I just described. I wanted to make sure that I could have a clear message on what success looked like. It was my responsibility to provide people with tools and then inspire them to be the personal best and hold them accountable. And fortunately, I was able to inspire this group of people to execute, which sounds very simple as I try to discuss it now, but quite simply, success looks like you're going out and you need to complete this product demonstration. You need to be there for 4 hours. You need to report your work. You need to be upbeat, professional, and positive and represent the brand that you have while you're there. And if you're able to do that, then that looks like success, and you need to do it on time and report it. Mm-hmm. All simple things, but we're able to do that. And ultimately, we grew that company from $12 million to $20 million. In just over a year. So I would say I learned that process really, really works, and that if you're able to inspire people to be their personal best, then you can realize your own success through them. And you have to be excited about that, which, you know, that's what drives me.
You know, it's interesting having so many execs and business owners on board. There's through this show, and obviously our listeners are primarily that as well, we all know that what sounds simple is not always that. You know, do this, do this, do this, and success is there. Well, that's, boy, that sounds easy. Why would you get paid so much to do that? Well, the reality is it's not that easy.
Yeah, I would agree. And when you say it, it sounds simple to yourself. And then
yeah, like you were saying right now, you're like, oh, this is no big deal. But then you look at the results, and the results speak for themselves.
And,
right?
And typically that's what happens. The results do speak for themselves.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Great. All right, we're going to come back to you, Marvin, in just a second.
Thank you.
I'd like to get a little bit of background on Jim Anderson. Now, Jim is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army.
That is correct.
And we were having a little discussion earlier. I was reading his bio, and it looked like he had flight experience, but instead he shoots down flying objects.
Yes, we did. I am an air defense officer by trade. We dealt with Patriot missiles, which obviously through the news during Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then most recently the beginning of the Iraq conflict. Patriots are famous for shooting down ballistic missiles as well as aircraft. And we also dealt with Stinger missiles as well, which are, if you watch any of the terrorist movies, that's the missile of choice to shoot down airliners.
Okay. The small but quick and nimble. Eh?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So tell us about your experience in the armed forces and kind of how you came to be here today.
I actually started planning for a military career when I was in the eighth grade. It's all I ever wanted to do, play with a lot of G.I. Joe, and kind of brought that into reality. I was commissioned in 1989, and I've been on active duty for about 21 years. I've got about 4.5 years of National Guard service, did 3 tours in Iraq, did a tour in Saudi Arabia, and just have traveled the world and really, really cannot complain whatsoever. It's been a great career. It's been a great ride. 25 years is just time to close that chapter out and do something new.
So I got to ask you these questions because you got all this crazy cool experience. Give me a story. Give me an example of a scenario where you were, you know, I don't know, shooting down a plane or I don't know.
We had just air assaulted, which means your air insertion by helicopter. We had just air inserted into Anajaf, which is a city south of Tikrit and Baghdad and al-Ramadi and those areas. And when we air assaulted into air assault, we set up the tactical command post for the 101st Airborne Division. And I was walking from my tent over to my work tent one morning, and I hear this whoosh and a bang. That's usually not good. That's absolutely correct. And I look up over my head, and about 100 yards away from our perimeter, a Patriot missile had intercepted a ballistic missile that was inbound to our position. Had that Patriot not intercepted, that missile would have hit our tactical command post.
Wow.
So, yeah, absolutely a hair-raising experience, but you look up and you go,
thanks for covering my back.
And not only that, but when you walk in the tent and everybody knows what happens, you all of a sudden become a real popular guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wow, that's amazing. Did you have any in any of the Gulf Wars or anything? I mean, you're in controlling the missiles, or are you planning them? Are you in charge of the tactical side of things? What did you do?
I did a lot. Well, in my earlier stages of my career, it was very tactical. Small unit movement, small unit emplacement, protecting mobile assets, tanks, Bradleys, infantry, armor, that kind of thing. Later in my career as a major and a lieutenant colonel, it became more of the strategic level, planning assets across broad space. For example, I planned the Patriot coverage for the entire air defense or for the entire 101st Airborne Division, which spanned, you know, several hundred square miles of space. So as you progress through the military, they start you off at very small unit level. For me, it was a 25-man unit was my first unit to command. And then they move you into a strategic vision and position as you grow in experience and you grow in rank. Once I culminated my career, I was the training operations director for U.S. Forces Command, which is the entire continental United States based forces.
So that sounds like a fairly big job.
You manage the resources and training development and accountability, as Marvin was saying, for about 750,000 soldiers across the country.
Yeah, it's kind of big.
It's impressive.
That's a lot. Marvin's over here going, wow.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
You know, I've been on a ship, though, and spent the night, and so I have great respect for Navy guys because, you know, I'm a small guy, and when I roll over and touch the bunk above me with my shoulder, then that's tight living quarters.
Hey, you know what? I appreciate you throwing us a bone after that tale about Patriot missiles. John, you didn't ask me anything about my time as an electrician. I'm kind of offended. You know, I have exciting stories about multimeters and, you know, measuring current. You'd be excited, I'm telling you.
Very, very good. Yeah. Very good. Well, that's fun stuff. So let's get into a little bit of the topic of today, which is, you know, how do you take this fantastic military experience that you guys have both had, and how do you transition it into corporate America?
Marvin obviously has successfully made that transition. I am fairly new at this. I just retired. My official retirement was 1 October. So, but I've actually been in the job hunt for about 5 months now. And so I am still trying to make that leap over into corporate America.
Well, let me start with you then, Jim. What has been the sticking point? And again, let's talking to our audience that could be military professionals, yep. And could be corporate America. Why is it so hard?
I found three things that consistently resonate in my job search. And those three things are qualifications, because military guys don't necessarily have opportunities to build PMP certifications, Lean Six Sigma, any of the things that corporate America, you know, reads and lives and breathes every day.
Right.
I also fitting in culture. There is a stigma out there that military guys are just these hardline killers that, you know, we come in, we blow stuff up. And granted, that is a cool part of our job. Yeah, absolutely. You know, only in America can you get paid to ride in tanks, helicopters, and shoot guns every day.
Right.
So, but the stigma that, you know, we can't get along, we military guys cannot get along with corporate America or communicate in a civilian world or network or get, you know, get in that space and fit in is a challenge.
It's kind of that jughead type concept of, hey, these guys aren't really going to be that broad.
Yeah, it's kind of that, but it's really more about focus. It's about military. The perception is that military guys, especially senior guys like myself who've been in the military for over 20 years, that we are so ingrained with military that, you know, we just come in, take over, and run roughshod over anybody and everybody to accomplish tasks. And that we can't negotiate, we can't, you know, be team players, that we can't listen to other ideas and move along as a team player.
Okay.
And it's very, very, it's mythical. That is not necessarily true. Now, you're going to have exceptions to every rule, but as a rule, that is not necessarily the case. And then the third challenge that I've consistently found is translating military skills into corporate accomplishments or corporate equivalents. One example I'll throw out that I use often is, as a battalion executive officer, is the title that we use, it is the equivalent of a COO of a company. I was the second in charge of a 500-man unit. I had 30 direct reports. I had about 400 indirect reports. And I managed about $1.1 billion worth of equipment. And wow. I was the chief of staff for all functionality within that unit. Personnel, logistics, administration, maintenance, plans, ops, training, budget, communications, you name it. I managed the entire staff, moving them into a common direction to make the unit's goals and missions accomplishable or better. So, but can I put COO on my resume? Absolutely not, because that's not a title the military uses. So translating those skills into something that a corporate exec or a hiring manager will take and say, you know what, this guy actually has some skills. You know, I'm going to take a chance and give him a shot versus, you know, this 15-year corporate exec who's out of work over here. You know, this guy's energetic. And the things that we do bring to the table that aren't necessarily, you know, thought about is we bring discipline, accountability, flexibility, adaptability, and ethics. And you think about it, a military guy changes jobs about every 1 to 2 years. And those jobs vary anywhere from leading a 25-man unit in the field to managing training operations for a 755,000-man organization.
Right.
So that adaptability to be able to walk in, do I have supply chain on my resume? Absolutely. Am I a professional supply chain manager in the corporate world? Absolutely not. But because of the training that the military gives us, I could walk into a company and I can adapt and learn very quickly. And most military guys can do that, especially your senior officers and your senior non-commissioned officers. They have that skill set to walk into a new job, assess that job, learn that job, and adapt to that job and move forward in that job very, very quickly.
Marvin, what have you found in making that transition? It was many moons ago, and you were probably set with similar issues. Right. How did it work for you?
Well, I'll definitely respond to that, but I have to comment on something that John said, if that's okay. I think that, I'm sorry, Jim,
that Jim said, I think he very succinctly outlined what the opportunities are. But I also want to qualify that, in my personal opinion, and I've been doing this for quite some time, much longer than Jim, the American perception of what the military is established in Hollywood. And I don't mean demean what the American public thinks, but in my experience, having been in the military and in corporate America, I've found that the thought process is more consistent with what they see in the movies. Everybody's in the Navy is like the guys from Top Gun.
Right.
And the guys in the Army or the Marines are like Rambo. And, you know, it sounds silly and you laugh, but there are people who think that way. And I think it's important for people in the military to understand that. And my next point on it is I've been knowing Jim for a few months. And the way, and I'm not trying to call you out, however, the way that you just articulated your military experience to what to corporate America, that didn't happen in our first meeting.
No,
so
it did not.
So in this evolution that you've gone through in 5 months, you've already been able to draw parallels to your military experience to that of what it could be or should be in corporate America. So I think that if you're able to do that much sooner than you are later, then the transition becomes easier, because
absolutely,
that's really what people want to know and must know.
Yeah,
and you got to know how to walk to lunch.
Yeah.
Because Marvin had to coach me on my step, because I actually move out with a military purpose. And so I have to thank him for that, because now I move a little slower, smoother.
There's nobody shooting at you. It's
absolutely
going to be okay.
Well, you know what? You got to take a gentleman's gait. And there are little things you need to know.
Absolutely. I agree.
Had more time, I'd tell you that story when I met Jim in uniform.
In uniform.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you real quick. I mean, you know, I was sitting inside of a local restaurant, and I'm watching this guy. He jumps out of an SUV. He has on his beret. He has on his fatigues. And I start getting nervous. Okay. What's going on? Oh, wait a minute. That's Jim. So, you know, the intimidation factor, the sense of urgency, which is a great skill set and something of value. You don't want to be in the military walking around as if you have nothing to do. But here in corporate America, there are a lot more people that refer to themselves as gentlemen. They walk at a different pace. They eat a little bit slower, because guess what? Your food's not going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They don't tell you that in the Army, though.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Both of you guys made that parallel, and that's the first thing that I wrote down is you've got to kind of take that responsibility of articulating how your experiences are parallel to what the position is that they're interviewing for. Is that, Marvin, is that what you said?
That's exactly right. And if we talk about my experience, my vantage point is different, because I served as an enlisted man for only 4 years. So I think Jim has even a better advantage over someone who was in for a shorter period of time, because he's older, wiser, more educated, and I joined at 17, was out at 21. So my experience is different in that I really knew less than you know. And the opportunity was, okay, how do I learn as much as I possibly can as I get out of the military? Because I recall getting out, and you know, thank you, United States Navy, for helping me with that 4-page resume. But for a guy with only 4 years of experience, that wasn't of great value.
Yeah.
And while I had a responsibility for, you know, millions of dollars in equipment, I wasn't able to really articulate how I could be of value to someone in corporate America. And just kind of stumbled my way through, and I just didn't know what I didn't know.
What would you suggest to military vets that are trying to get into corporate America? How do they start getting their foot in the door? I mean, before they even get a chance to talk and make that translation of how these skills apply to the position that they're trying to interview for, how do they need to get out in front of people and make that kind of networking piece?
Well, having done it, I'll answer first. And from my perspective, the first thing you need to do is be clear on what it is you want to do specifically. You need to have a clear understanding of, okay, I want to be in corporate America, but I want to be in corporate America and do what specifically? And if you're separating, if I had to do all over again, I would have taken off maybe 2 weeks and said, okay, this is what I want to do specifically. And then I would have developed a strategy to pursue it. And I think that is the first thing that you have to do is specifically what you want to do. And then I challenge you to pursue it relentlessly. And I think what you can do to prepare yourself is to prepare yourself. And that is, now my perspective on the military is different, because I still consider it a corporation. I think it is a corporation that behaves differently than any other corporations. It has its own
corporate culture. It has its own set of politics. It has its own set of challenges. It has its own set of deliverables.
That's very true.
And it has its own budgets and P&Ls that it's managing. So you're preparing to work for a different corporation that behaves differently. So if you're getting out, I say you need to prepare yourself for what the culture of this corporate America is. And that's simple things like reading books, you know, becoming more acclimated to general business terminology, whatever the latest, greatest leadership book is. I mean, a lot of people recommend, you know, Jim Collins, Good to Great, or self-help. And now it's even easier because you have instantaneous access through social media and the internet. You need to be studied on what it is you want to do specifically and be able to speak to those points, because that doesn't cost you anything but time.
Yep, that's very true. And I would, to take off of that too, I would also say network, network, network. Networking for military guys, get on LinkedIn. Absolutely get on LinkedIn and start building a network. Find avenues and venues, and I know we'll talk about this a little later, like the Veterans Mentorship Program that Kettering Executive Network runs. Get alongside of corporate executives and talk to them. Ask them questions. Let them see your resume. And I'll tell you, resumes, everybody has an opinion. I vetted my resume with probably 10 different corporate C-level and VP-level executives. And I did them sequentially. I did number one, made changes. Number two, made changes, so on and so forth. When I got to number 10, made the changes, I went back to number one and let them look at it again.
Huh.
And when number one started undoing number 10's changes, I knew I was about where I needed to be.
Right.
So
right. Everyone's, you know, got an opinion. Right?
Everybody's got an opinion. So, but the deal is you have to get where you're comfortable with expressing your skill sets to the corporate world, because you're the one who has to sit in the interview and stand behind it and explain it and be able to talk through it.
Right.
And the networking piece, the reason I say networking is so important for military guys is because we network with us. In that corporate world that Marvin was talking about, you know, I network with military guys. Well, if I'm trying to break into corporate America, guess what?
Not going
to
help you much.
Unless I'm going into a defense contracting company where a bunch of retired generals and colonels are working, that's not going to pay me very much dividends.
Yeah.
So, you know, network outside of your space, and it's uncomfortable at first, but it'll pay you huge dividends in the end. Start early. Start early. When you know you're going to retire, when you know you're going to separate from the military, start right then doing those things that Marvin was talking about. Figure out what you want to do. Research corporate America, because operations in corporate America isn't necessarily the same as operations in the military. Start looking at what you want to do. Start working your resume, your business cards, your elevator speech, you know, all of those things that you don't know about as a military guy, but that networking with corporate execs will help you learn. Read the books. And I'm not trying to give a plug here on the air, but I read What Color's My Parachute? Very informative for a guy getting out of the military.
Hmm.
It's kind of a one over the world on transitioning from one corporation to another. So it was very helpful for me as a military guy.
And if I could add to that, I think the other part that I started to hit on earlier was assimilation.
Yes.
And the sooner, now, I'm very, very proud of all of our people in the military. Thank you for your service. Appreciate everything you do in protecting our freedoms.
Absolutely.
And however, I wanted to see you assimilate to be able to provide for your family the same way you did in the military. And the best way to do that is, you know, quite honestly, to be appreciative of the things that you've learned, but turn the page and be prepared to grow as a now corporate professional. And what that means is some of the things we already talked about. You're less intimidating from a military standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not necessarily using acronyms. You're behaving as a part of a, you know, you're no longer part of a collective. When you're in the military, in my opinion, you are a part of a collective. You're not really responsible for building your own brand as much as you are out here in this side. And I say that to say that when you get out, you immediately have a job that you will have for the rest of your life. And I'm not sure we're going to get to this part of the show, but I'll bring it up now and you can rein me in.
Please.
That is, you will always be, from this moment on, a brand manager. And you are the brand manager of you.
Yep.
No one else is going to represent that brand more than you are. And you're going to have that job in this new era of social media for the rest of your life. So whoever you are on Facebook, whoever you are on LinkedIn, whoever you are on Google+, whoever you are when you go to these networking meetings, you're the brand manager of that first, and you must promote your brand. And sure, you're going to join a company, and you're going to be a part of them. You're going to make a difference.
But ultimately, all the jobs that you have, whether it's in the military or outside or temporary, and I don't care if you've been there 25 years or 5 years or 5 months, they are now temporary in the world that we live in today.
Yes.
And the best way to remain relevant is to do an adequate job of managing your own personal brand.
Let me actually take that and run with it a little bit. The second thing that you talked about, Jim, was preconceived notions.
Yes.
That of what corporate America sees in the military. And the meeting that you had with Marvin very first time accentuated
yes.
that preconceived notion probably, right?
A little.
So how do you trim the edge, right, but keep the meat? You know what I mean? How do you keep what's really valuable that you got, but you're able to express that, but you get rid of some of the edginess that may be a little bit more standoffish in corporate America?
I could sum that up in one word: humility. As a military guy, when you come out of the military, especially after an extended period, you know that you have skills, and you know that you could do things. In certain circumstances that, civilian people or corporate people couldn't do,
right.
As far as managing and leading. And it goes back to, and I'll touch on this in a second, leaders versus managers. And so you have to come in from your career and be very, very humble, because you are stepping into a space that you know nothing about. And it is an unknown for you. Now, there are those jobs in the military where you're exposed to corporate America, but you don't work for corporate America. And it is a different politic. It is a different environment. It is a different social media, social structure. So when you come in as a military guy, you come in with the utmost humility and say, I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah,
and I need to figure that out. And you can help me figure that out and help me learn, how to fit into your culture and how to, move in. And it's just like when we deploy to another country. It's learning what ticks or what makes that other culture move. And it is. Going into corporate America is another culture. So, it's just like when you go to the Middle East, they tell you don't show the bottom of your shoes to the people because it's insulting. Don't shake with your left hand. It's insulting. So you come into corporate America very humble and you say, what are those things that you appreciate? What are those things you look for? What are those things that turn you off? And you have to take that feedback with a grain of salt and walk away and not be insulted or not be offended by that feedback. For example, and I like to use that example about how I walked into the meeting with Marvin. You can't come in and say, well, what do you mean how I walk? I mean, you have to take that and say, well, this is his culture. This is his world. I'm just passing through.
That's a great parallel that you made in the different countries, being deployed in one country and understanding it, because
I
would imagine these guys being in Iraq, being in Iran, being in the Middle East and all over the place, every place has a different way, right?
Yes.
And if you make that parallel saying, look, when you're going into corporate America, treat it like you're being redeployed to a country that you don't know how they work.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Marvin, I was going to cut you.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, Jim, actually you were marching. And there was a difference. I just want to clarify that. So that
it wasn't a pace, it was a march.
It was.
A march with a purpose.
I was actually doing cadence in my head. I just didn't want to let him see it.
Well, the strange part is I started doing the cadence with you. You took me back 20 years into my career.
Which just goes to show you never let it go, man.
No, you don't, because you stay true to it. I think it never leaves you. And certain things, to your point, John, that you don't want to lose.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the thing that you gain, one of the gains, the things you gain most in the military is discipline, self-discipline. And the transition for me when I got my first civilian job was coming out, and then people were able to be unproductive and not be held accountable for it. They could move at a different pace. With something I thought that maybe should take an hour, may have taken 4 hours. I'm like, well, how can this be? I wouldn't be able to do this if I were back on my ship. But the thing about it is I also, in the example I'm talking about, I had good leadership on the ship that I was on. Therefore, we had a process where we were held accountable for our own success.
Yes.
And we were very disciplined. And it did come back to leadership. And I think it's the same in corporate America. And that is, if you start with good leadership, then you can begin to produce good results. But if you don't, then you're going to have some of the same challenges that are not just you know, for corporate America or for the military, they are the same. So yeah. I think leadership is a very important component of it.
It is. And that's what I was trying to touch on a second ago about leaders versus managers. And there are both in both cultures, in the military and in corporate America. But what I found through my 25 years of military experience is that not leaders, usually good leaders make decent managers, but not all good managers make decent leaders. Because the difference between the two is really the human aspect, the human factor. And what the military teaches its people is leadership. It teaches you to deal with that human factor because I was fortunate enough to meet...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You almost feel like it's the opposite. You know, that preconceived notion you think about in the military is don't worry about it. It's not just follow the rules and that's exactly what needs to happen. Instead of what you just said is... They're actually teaching you how to deal with the human aspect
of
it.
They are.
So expand on that.
And I will. The hardest group to lead is your peers. They'll tell you that any day. The hardest group to lead is your peers. In my last position, I had six other lieutenant colonels working for me. So you can't just walk in and say, do this. Now, you can by position, but by rank, you can't because they're the same as you.
Yeah.
So I was very fortunate enough to meet General Hal Moore, retired. If you've ever seen the movie, We Were Soldiers, it's based on the book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, about a Vietnam experience. He said that the definition of leadership is getting a group of guys at four corners of a map sheet on a hill in the pouring rain at night while they're hungry under enemy fire to do what you want them to do to accomplish the mission.
Yeah.
And that's what the military teaches its leaders to do, is to lead people into a firefight, you know, when people are shooting at you, and do the mission, regardless of personal loss, gain, or circumstance.
We're just the corporate America trying to get them to reduce their smoke breaks in their lunch. That seems like a little bit less of an issue.
But that's the thing is, you know, when you go to a corporate, when you're transitioning into corporate America, that leadership a lot of times is overlooked. Because it's not something that you necessarily can quantify on a resume.
And Marvin, you brought up the same thing, this leadership management. Mm-hmm. That's a piece that you put in your title in terms of being a service operations leader, not a manager. You actually made that
absolutely. That. There is a great distinction because, you know, as Jim outlined, in management, someone could give you orders and you could manage those people by just telling them exactly what you want them to do specifically. And they'll probably do it. But what are they going to do when you turn your back?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I think what a leader does is you inspire people to achieve their personal best. And if they understand that that's what you're genuine interest in, then you're going to be able to get a lot more out of them versus saying, do it because I said so. I don't think that is a method, while it can produce results, but there will be short-term results in my observation.
Absolutely. And when you talk about that self-discipline, that is something that the military grows and instills into its people, is that discipline, because discipline is doing the right thing when nobody's watching.
Yeah. Right.
And so that's something that you know, the predominance your military guys will bring to a corporate setting is that discipline and that work ethic. That, you know, we absolutely will do what it takes to be successful.
And I appreciate what you're saying, and I believe it, and I know that to be true. But however, sitting in a corporate seat and having run multiple business units, I can tell you that there is a great a misconception about what you just stated. And the other side of what some people in corporate America, not you guys that are listening, because I'm sure you all don't discriminate against people in the military, but... for those few people that do, some of the things that are thought of are, okay, well, this person won't be able to think outside the box. They are accustomed to following orders, and if you don't give them orders, they're not going to be productive.
Right.
Their personalities is that of whatever their platoon is or their squad is, and they won't be able to get along with the people here in this particular office, and it's going to take them some time. And they won't understand that you have to, you know, live, work, and play. You have to be excited about being here. And it's not all straight up and down military lifestyle where you're just out giving orders. And there's also a contingent that believes that people coming out of the military are lazy. And they're only working when they're at in a time of conflict. But otherwise, they're laying around not doing anything versus it's not like that here at our company. Mm-hmm. And I say those things because I have heard them, I have seen them, and clearly I try to influence them differently.
Yeah.
But you are naive if you believe that everyone believes that because you've been in the military, you've had this great training, that you're going to be productive, because the opposite is sometimes what people believe. Think, okay, well, you're probably not as educated, when really you're going to go through a very intense learning process where you are accountable for learning, and people are going to lose their lives if you did not
learn.
So I think those are the things that are out there that maybe people don't want to talk about.
Let me shift gears just a little bit.
Sure.
Because I want to now talk to the corporate execs that are out there that are hiring these people, hiring these positions. And, you know, as a business owner, hiring people, I think about it all the time. What the military, what the people out there, what you guys have done for us, how do we repay you? How do we go out and say, look, thank you, and give you opportunities that maybe not even were available before? But I think a lot of execs and business owners don't know really where to start. What would you say to the execs that are out there, and that how can they reach out to that community and give them opportunities, provide benefits, provide help? I know you mentioned Ken is Kettering Networking Session Group is helping some veterans and reaching out that way. But what other ways can executives reach out and help?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there are things that executives can do, but to the executive's credit, there's not a great avenue that's provided by the government or the military.
That's correct.
To, number one, prepare people for what's on the outside. They're obviously have other important agenda items. So you as an executive have to make a concerted effort to be more objective towards people in the military and what that's going to mean to you net benefit. And that's not easy to do, because oftentimes you're focused on top line and bottom line, and the people in human resources are responsible for recruiting talent. And unless you create an avenue where you express to them your importance, that there's value in dealing with people in the military, it's just not going to happen, because everything begins and ends with leadership, you know, coming from my perspective. So I think the first thing you have to do is be objective to people in the military, and understand that if they were successful doing something that they're really good at in the military, they're going to be just as good here on the outside. They just have to have the avenue to do it. So I think being objective towards it is the first step, because without that, then, you know, there's no progress to be made.
And along with that objectivity, I would say the one resource that corporate executives could contribute is time. Because when you look at the HR screen on resumes, and I've run into this problem a couple times, is that because military guys don't have PMP, Six Sigma, and all of those catch buzz phrases, words, qualifications, I call it alphabet soup, on their resume, you don't make it to the hiring manager, to the corporate exec. So corporate executives who really want to help military guys transition into corporate America, put the word on the street to your HR department that if a military resume comes in, don't screen it out immediately.
Right.
You know, take a look at those skill sets, or pass that to the hiring manager. Let him take a look at those skill sets, and then take the time. I mean, 30 minutes. Take 30 minutes for a quick phone interview. I mean, it doesn't have to be an overt action. Take a phone interview and let that military guy talk to you about his skills and his accomplishments, because a lot of times it's lost in translation on paper.
Right.
What the military guy has done and what he can do a lot of times doesn't cleanly translate in a resume, whereas if you can talk to him and ask pointed questions and him give you pointed answers, the light will come on and you go, wow, this guy actually does have the skills that I'm looking for. So give that time to give that military guy a shot at speaking with a hiring manager or somebody who can make an informed decision of whether or not he's the right fit for that job or should move forward in the interview process.
What the translation thing keeps coming up, right? Because that's going to be key. So even if a hiring manager goes in and says, yeah, I'll talk to him. We don't really know what it sounds like. The colonel sounds good, you know. Captain, I guess, is pretty good. I watched MASH for a while, and the colonel was the colonel, and the captain was the surgeon, and so I think I got an idea where that ranks.
Yeah.
But they don't have a freaking clue.
Yeah.
So clearly, it is on the shoulders of the candidate,
it
of
is.
That
Absolutely.
Person, to
Absolutely.
make that clarification. But if they're looking on a resume, and maybe you can speak both to candidates and to hiring managers, what are some of the things? And again, let's talk about more executive level positions.
Okay.
What are some of the things that they should be looking for that show honors or successes or designations in the military that might also translate nicely into corporate America?
You know what? Let me answer having hired some significant high-level people. John, you're exactly right that the onus is on the individual to make sure that they paint a picture that the hiring manager likes, and I challenge that person should be objective. But what you're really challenged to do is to do exactly that. Present a picture that looks like you're going to be able to add value to our organization. And while that's not easy, it is something, quite frankly, that you are definitely tasked with doing, and not necessarily the hiring manager, because ultimately at a very high level, you're talking COO, CEO, president level, and they have to understand, they have to understand very quickly what you can bring to the table, and it's not their onus to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the military guys, you know, when you build your resume, I mean, really, you've got to translate your skill sets into language that corporate America understands. Talk about dollar amounts. Talk about personnel headcount. Talk about skill sets, strategic planning, operations management, supply chain management, program management, project management, and equate your tasks and activities in the military into that lingo. You know, for example, one of my particular jobs, I was a user representative in the corporate world for weapons systems procurement. I managed programs in excess of $5 billion worldwide.
Wow.
And so...
That's a big number.
It is a big number, absolutely. But I was responsible for dealing with the corporations that fielded those systems to the Army. And I was the guy, I was the gate that the corporations had to pass through in order to get that system implemented into the force. So how does that equate to corporate America? Well, it's procurement, it's contract negotiation, it's program management, it's supply chain,
yeah,
it's training devices. You know, so it's all of those aspects. However, you put that on paper, and it doesn't necessarily make it in front of the hiring manager. But if the hiring manager sees those numbers and those percentages on paper, then he can ask those pointed questions that says, what do you mean $5.2 billion worth of equipment? What did that equate to? How did you do that? What is that about? You know, or as the chief of staff, how many direct reports does that equate to? That's 35 direct reports. What? Because in corporate America, as I've, at least through my experience of talking to corporate execs, you know, the average number of direct reports a corporate exec manages is anywhere from 5 to 15 or 20. So, I mean, the skills are there. It's just a matter of being able to translate them into a language that somebody else understands.
I would have to say that clearly you now understand what it is that the journey is, and will get past it.
You've obviously spent time in making those connections, because
yes,
you can clearly see the story. You can
exactly.
You're connecting the dots, right?
Absolutely.
You're connecting the dots, and you will, and every person in the military will eventually. The question is, how fast can you do it? And that is, you know, speed to market.
Absolutely.
Ultimately what that's going to be. And the other part of it is, sure, you're going to do it. The time is the challenge to make sure that you do it, but ultimately you're responsible for it. And I think... now, as long as people understand that out of the gate, then I think they'll be in a better position sooner than later.
And I would offer that to the military guys, and this is very pointed at them, to the military guys, it's expectation management. I mean, when you come out of the military, everybody's offering to help. Well, what that offer for help means is not necessarily I want to hire you today. So when I first came out, I come out and I'm like, I'm a lieutenant colonel, 25 years of service. I've been around the world. I've done it all, seen it all. And so, you know, I mean, companies ought to be beating down my door. Well, that's not the case. You're an unknown quantity in corporate America. So manage your expectations that you're not going to just walk out. A lot of times what that help means is, hey, I'll look over your resume and give you some advice.
Right.
So manage your expectations as a military guy that, you know, the transition into corporate America versus staying in the government space is a whole different animal, and it's a longer process. Like I said, I've been job hunting for about 5 months now. I've done some interviews with some companies that fell through, you know, at the last minute. And so that's a crushing blow for a guy who's like, oh, this is done. I'm sewed up. I got a job. And you know, and then you don't get a call back, and you're like, well, what the heck? You know, he said he wanted to help. Why didn't he call me back? So, I mean, the military guys really need to manage their expectations that if you're going to jump corporations from the military corporation to, you know, the non or the civilian corporation space, then you need to know that there are some transition bridges to cross before you make that complete jump.
It's just part of the journey.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, and I'm going to wrap up by asking a couple of really two more questions. The first is on Ken Kettering. And I know, Marvin, you are active and kind of one of the leaders in helping to develop this veterans special interest group. Maybe you could tell the listeners a little bit about that and what maybe is available as an opportunity for people there.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. I do serve as co-executive chairman of the KEN, which is Kettering Executive Network, and internally we have a special interest group, and it's called the VETSIG, which is Veterans Employment Task Force. And really what we have been chartered to do is to create a mentorship program for people that are separating from the military that are of executive leadership capacity, meaning they're going to be a future corporate executive leader, providing mentors for them so that they can actually go through the process of learning what to do, what not to do, based upon through the guidance and leadership of a KEN approved mentor. And I think for people that don't know, the KEN Executive Network is really a group of Atlanta-based executives who have achieved a certain level of responsibility. I think it's like $25 million in P&L responsibility with at least 10 direct reports, something like that, that are bona fide executives or have been at some point in their career. And what better group to partner with from a mentor standpoint than someone who's been where you specifically want to be? Even though in Jim's case, you were an executive in the military, clearly there's some transition to do it on the outside.
Absolutely. And the VETSIG for Kettering, they are invaluable in helping those military guys learn what they don't know. And I'll throw myself under the bus. I didn't own a suit until I got out of the military. You know, so to find out what is a corporate, you know, acceptable presentation, your gait when you walk, your business cards, the way they should look, your elevator speech, your resume's format, you know, how to network in a different environment. Because not all military guys are the same, and they don't all get it. So, I mean, it's really eye-opening to find out exactly what we don't know about corporate America coming out of the military. And the VETSIG is really invaluable with those mentors helping those military guys learn and educate themselves so that they are better prepared for the next mission.
So I'd imagine there's two opportunities there. One is veterans that maybe fit into that role. Are you looking to help certain people, or is there a max limit, or how does it work?
Well, it's a pretty small program, and there are about 1,000 Kettering members, and about 10% of that group have agreed to be mentors. So we have space probably for about 100 veterans that fit kind of the profile that we're looking for. And I guess I'm challenged when I talk about it, because it sounds very elitist, but there are lots of programs to help veterans in general, especially enlisted guys find opportunities that are not necessarily real leadership opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many groups that specifically help people that have achieved a high level in the military, and that's really what Kettering has aligned itself to do, because that's really the space that we operate in.
And you've got to be a Kettering member to be the mentor.
Correct.
But not to be the mentee.
Correct.
Exactly. Okay.
Correct. And I would offer, John, off of what Marvin just said, that there are recruiting firms out there that target military guys. There are several. I've talked to many of them. They target your junior guys, you know, the four-year guys or the six-year guys, you know, young officers, young enlisted guys who get out, who can be placed very quickly in corporate America at lower tier levels.
Yep.
But their target audience is not the senior guys like myself who have that executive leadership, executive level experience,
right,
who would transition into corporate America at a director or higher level position.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at recruiting companies, yeah, they look at several of them out there and they say, well, why don't you go to them? Well, that's why. Their target audience is those junior guys that are quickly placeable in lower tier, bottom level, entry level positions.
So if somebody wanted to get in contact with you about this program, how would they reach out to you?
Well, since it's so small and it is volunteer, I would recommend that they reach out to me directly. And if it's okay, I'll give them my contact information.
Absolutely.
You can reach me at marvin.austin@att.net. That's marvin.austin@att.net. And just in the subject line, mention this program and that you're a veteran. And I'm sure that there's something that we could do to point you in the right direction should you be a candidate that fits our specific profile.
Great. And Jim, if somebody wants to reach out to you, questions, or were you open to helping?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can reach me at james.c.anderson1968@gmail.com. That's
okay.
james.c.anderson1968@gmail.com.
Okay.
And when I say Austin, that's Austin like Texas. So A-U-S-T-I-N.
Thank you. So one last question for each of you. We like to kind of end the show with what we call a pearl of wisdom, which is just something that you could impart on the audience that's just something you feel is important. Marvin, I'm gonna put you on the spotlight first. What would your pearl of wisdom be?
Well, I feel bad that I've already given my pearl of wisdom, and that's my whole approach to brand management. And I assure you that the world is a lot flatter than it used to be, and you exist in the eyes of really anyone that has an internet connection. And the best way for you to promote your brand is to have a good existence on the internet, be it any type of social media medium. You are challenged because this is challenging economic times, and you're competing against a lot of people that are qualified to do the same job that you would have gotten pretty easily 10 years ago. So what can you do to separate yourself? You can make sure that you present yourself in a brand that distinguishes the things that you bring to the table. This certainly what I think my pearl of wisdom is today. So hopefully it's useful to someone.
Yeah, we could probably do a whole show on Marvin's branding. Yeah. This guy wears the suits. He's all done up perfectly on a daily basis.
He's my hero.
I don't think I've ever seen him all out of line or anything. He's just on it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for saying it's part of my brand.
That's right. There it is. He's working it. So Jim, how about you?
For me, I would say a pearl to the military guys that is what I've already offered. Nobody is going to take care of you better than you. And so do your homework. Do what it takes, the legwork up front early in determining where you want to go and how you want to get there. And don't deter from the course. For the corporate guys who are listening, I would say the pearl of wisdom is when I talked expectation management to the military guys, I'll transition that pearl over to the corporate guys too, because military guys are guys that generally have action. They're not guys that necessarily have words. So when you come up to a military guy, they certainly love it when you say thank you, and it's appreciated, and it's heartfelt. When you say, how can I help you? Military guys equate that to action. Not necessarily just, I'm here, give me a call sometime.
Yeah.
They equate that to, hey, what are you going to do to really help me advance forward? Because military guys take that to heart, and they take it literally, and they say, okay, you want to help? I need a job.
Yeah.
So that's how you can help me.
Yeah.
And so I would offer that, be prepared when you tell a military guy, how can you help me? You have to understand what you're saying to him.
Be specific.
Be very specific, yeah. Because he wants the help and he needs the help and he'll take the help, but you have to let him know expectation-wise up front what that help looks like.
Great. Well, great show, guys. You definitely exceeded expectations. I appreciate your time for both coming out.
No, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for having us. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's certainly my pleasure. And to our audience, we appreciate your time. And until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.